The New York Mafia. A source of both fear and fascination, the Mafia has long been part of New York City.
New York's Mafia story began with the arrival of large numbers of poor Italian immigrants in the early 1900s. Many were from Sicily and southern Italy, where organized crime gangs such as the Cosa Nostra and the Camorra had long existed. The Sicilian model was copied by Italian street gangs as they grew into larger, more powerful organizations. By the 1920s, they controlled the city's gambling, prostitution, and most importantly, its illegal bars, called speakeasies, of the Prohibition era. It was this that first made folk heroes of the gangsters, because New Yorkers were never in favor of prohibition to begin with. The mob supplied alcohol to, or operated, all the city's speakeasies, from the roughest gin joints to the smartest nightclubs, making almost everyone a partner in crime with the Mafia. While prohibition made the Mafia incredibly rich and powerful, the 1920s were also a time of vicious gang wars as rival groups sought dominance in the city. Ultimately, everyone could see this was bad for business, so in 1931, the gangs organized themselves into five families with clearly defined geographical zones. Any disputes between them were to be mediated by the legendary Commission, a pan-mafia advisory body with representatives not just from all the New York gangs, but also those in Chicago and Boston. Did it stop gang wars? No, but the scale and frequency of the disputes and violence became less important, and the five Mafia families remained over the following decades. Those same five families exist in New York today: the Bonanno, Colombo, Gambino, Genovese, and Lucchese families. Although they now have to contend with more recent arrivals, such as the Colombian and Russian mafias, New Yorkers know where members of the New York Mafia live, mostly in Staten Island, and which aspects of city life they control. Back in the 1970s, in the Mafia's heyday, little happened in New York without the Mafia's involvement. As well as their traditional sources of revenue, protection, extortion, gambling, prostitution, they had taken control of the very fabric of the city by muscling their way into the labor unions. Everything from construction to waste management to trucking and ports to the hotel industry was under Mafia control. This perhaps explains ex-President Donald Trump's strange admiration for tough guy dictators such as Vladimir Putin. They behaved just like the gangsters he had links to as a New York property developer. The strength of the Mafia system was that the bosses and the upper management were never directly involved in crimes. They just gave the orders. So if the police sent a few low-level mafiosi, called buttons, to prison, it didn't damage the organization. Also, the Sicilian code of omerta, or silence on pain of death, meant that no button would admit that the Mafia even existed. All that changed in the 1980s when a law known as the RICO Act made it easier to imprison someone for ordering a crime. The FBI installed bugs in all the Mafia bosses' homes. By 1986, they had enough evidence to arrest the bosses of all five families and many of their lieutenants. Most of them died in jail. Many people think that that was the end of New York's five families. But that's just what the Mafia wants people to think. In fact, the Mafia is still active and involved in all its old schemes. The difference is that it has become much more secretive and wary of surveillance. Various estimates say that around 12,000 people in New York work for the Mafia, about 10% of whom are made men or within the family inner circles. The FBI, meanwhile, has redirected most of its resources into fighting terrorism. The Wall Street Journal says, however, that the surveillance disaster of the 1980s has left today's aging bosses anxious about handing over to the next generation. The problem is that the younger mafiosi, like everyone else, use their phones for everything. One was recently arrested after issuing death threats by text message.